good friend and neighbor. This is Phil Nee, and I hope all your trails are happy and warm today. We'll say goodbye, put our little records away, and bring on some community conversation following the news update next. Sponsored by Pamela's Fine Jewelry, a full-service jewelry store in downtown Spring Green, and the Phoenix Center, family fun at its best. There's always something for everyone, including bowling, legendary pizza, and video games. It is 2 degrees below zero, and the time is 9 o'clock.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Some federal employees who took the buyout offer from Elon Musk's government efficiency office were then fired by mistake, says an official with the Office of Personnel Management, who adds that they will honor the buyout. A Trump administration official confirms to ABC News that Musk's outfit is requesting access to an IRS data system that stores personal tax information on millions of Americans. The official says so far access has not been granted. ABC's Ann Flaherty.
Right now, they don't seem to know the impact of these layoffs. What they're trying to do is this kind of shock and awe.
Musk has alleged government waste and fraud, but has not cited any evidence or examples. Thousands are without power, and at least 10 are dead from violent storms with wind and flooding across the South. Shakira posts on X that she canceled last night's concert in Lima because she went into the ER with abdominal issues. Expected to be released on Monday. This is ABC News. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has signaled that he's moving ahead with this proposal that has sparked debate and condemnation in the Mideast. In Tel Aviv, ABC's Marcus Moore.
He also reaffirmed President Trump's plan to move Palestinians from Gaza to neighboring Egypt and Jordan, but that plan has already been rejected by leaders in Egypt and Jordan who are working on an alternative that would see Palestinians staying in Gaza. Now, Secretary Rubio also said a peace in Gaza is not possible if Hamas is allowed to continue being a governing force there and a military force in the region.
LeBron James sat out the NBA All-Star game the first time he has been selected but didn't play. Los Angeles Lakers star announced that he would miss it about 90 minutes before it was set to start. He cited foot and ankle issues. William Byron raced to his second straight Daytona 500 win, dodging a string of late race wrecks that knocked out a chunk of contenders at Daytona International Speedway. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Are you looking for the perfect gift or a little sparkle for yourself? Pam's Fine Jewelry in Spring Green is a full-service jewelry store with a wide variety of styles to fit every occasion. From engagement rings to timeless keepsakes, our friendly and knowledgeable staff is here to help you find something special. Stop by today or give us a call at 588-2134. Pam's Fine Jewelry, where elegance and service shine. Pam's will be closed until March 18th and reopening March 19th. The best place to catch a Friday night fish dinner is the Phoenix Center. Dine in or carry out delicious deep-fried or baked fish. Fish is served from 4 to 8 p.m. Fridays only. The Phoenix Center serves food and fun every day. The pizza is out of this world, and after a great meal, make it an even better night with a game of bowling. The Phoenix Center is family fun at its best, open at 11 a.m. Monday through Sunday. The Phoenix Center, this area's go-to spot for good times and great food.
Your WRCO Hometown Weather Watch is brought to you by the Schultz Mortgage Team. Call 608-738-8765 and find out how you can buy a house without needing 20% down.
A high of 4 today, a low of 12 degrees below zero tonight, and a high of 8 on Tuesday. A cold weather advisory in effect from now until tonight through noon on Tuesday for wind chills 20 to 25 below zero today, closer to 30 below by Tuesday morning. 12 degrees by Wednesday, warming to the upper teens Thursday, 25 by Friday.
If winter weather means you're spending more time indoors, why not make your space more inviting? Well, Macy's is here for you. Our President's Day sale is going on right now with big savings on what you need to refresh your entire home. 20 to 60% off. Up to 60% off new furniture, mattresses, and more. And when you come into Macy's this weekend, you can treat yourself to an extra 20% off clearance throughout the store. Whether you're in the mood to refresh your home or wardrobe, Macy's has the President's Day deals you need now. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Life is filled with decisions, some required and some optional. And then there are decisions we make by making no decision at all. I'm Nick Hodge of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service in Richland Center in Muscadet. We encourage you to gift yourself and your loved ones by making the decision to plan your final wishes. Decide today to make that decision. We'll be glad to support and help you at the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service You can start that journey at PrattFuneralService.com.
You've changed thousands of diapers, cut off hundreds of crusts, played hours of peekaboo and duck duck goose, because you do anything for your kids. That's why it's so important to protect them with life insurance from State Farm. Julie Karen State Farm will help make it easy and affordable to help protect your family, no matter what the future holds. Because for the people you do anything for, life insurance could mean everything. Call, text, or stop by Julie Karen State Farm in downtown Richland Center. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Free February sale is going on at Furniture Decor and More in Boscobel and Westby. This month only, get free financing, free in-town delivery, and free gift with qualifying purchase. Don't miss it. Free February at Furniture Decor and More, Boscobel and Westby. Free February sale going on at Furniture Decor and More in Westby and Boscobel. This month only, get free financing, free in-town delivery, and a free gift with a qualifying purchase. Don't miss it. Free February at Furniture Decor and More, Boscobel and Westby.
Welcome to our morning show studios today. We have Representative Tony Kurtz in the studio representing Wisconsin's 41st Assembly District and Representative Todd Novak representing Assembly District 51. Good to talk to you gentlemen today, bringing you some warm thoughts. Tony, how are you?
Morning, Phil. Morning to all your wonderful listeners. It's wonderful to be here, especially with my good friend, Todd.
Todd, it's been a while since you've been in the studios.
Yeah, I think May was the last time I was here, so it's great to be back, and it's always just makes me warm and fuzzy to be with Tony Kurtz. So Valentine's Day was Friday, you know.
Sure.
I get to spend Monday with, we're together all week in session, so.
Well, we were with each other on Friday Valentine's along with Day. Representative Jacobson and Representative Trannell.
Yeah.
Be my Valentine. Yes. Yeah. Roll up your pants legs a little bit here today. So, Todd, you represent a different district than the last time you were here. Can you tell us where you represent now?
Yeah, I was thinking about that driving up here because, you know, I had the southern part of corner of Richland County and Lone Rock and that whole area. And it's Tony's now, but I really miss that area. But I have all of Iowa County now instead of half. All of Lafayette, which I had most of before, and then I have the northern part of Grant, like Muscadet, Blue River, Livingston, Mountfort, that area, and all the townships just around it. Almost go to Fenimore, and then I have Cuba City and Hazel Green in the southern part. And then for kicker, they gave me a little piece of Dane County, so I have Mount Horeb and Blue Mounds and two townships there. So it was a different election for me this time. About 50% of my district was new, so it was really interesting and fun to get to know the new people in my district. So,
You're still kind of in the middle, though, living in Dodgeville.
Yeah,
right?
Dodgeville. I am exactly in the middle. It's a pretty big district, you know, to go from Blue River all the way on one side to Mount Horeb on the other, still border the Illinois line. Travis, you know, the Grant County piece I took from Travis, and then they gave him Crawford County, so we all kind of shifted. And Travis and I, of course, still have Howard as a senator. Tony doesn't anymore, so he's really not part of our delegation. So he's like, he's gone a little below us, but we still like to work with him and bring him in for things for the area. So
he's an outcast.
Yeah, he's an outcast. No, we still work all together for Southwest Wisconsin. It doesn't make a difference. So
awesome, Tony. How are things on the farm these days?
I'm glad we got a little snow cover, but yeah. I'm kind of wondering if it's too late because, you know, there's a lot of winter wheat. A lot of people worried about, you know, their alfalfa, and I guess only time will tell when the spring comes. So, yeah, because not having that snow cover for so long, I mean, it really, I think, hurt a lot of winter wheat. But once again, we'll see. But we do need the snow cover. We need the ground moisture, and hopefully it will sink in. I don't know if it will, because of course the ground's pretty frozen too. So
could be getting some more snow though. Hopefully, you know, we do. That's the case. So you were here a little earlier. You did a tour of the Richland campus facility, the former campus. Can you give us an update or some things?
So on Friday, Representative Novak and I were with a couple of the county board chairs, and they were just going over some of the issues they're facing, obviously with budget season coming up. But afterwards, I took a tour with county board chair and the interim county administrator of the campus out there, and I was a little disappointed on the way UW, and I'm actually being very kind when I say disappointed. UW left a mess out there, to be very honest with folks, and so I'm actually going to have a meeting with UW Assistant President Mr. Rothman next week concerning that, because it is entirely unacceptable the mess they left out at that campus, and I am being very kind with my words right now, because when I got done touring the facility, I was actually pretty livid, because what they left out there it's like you know, when COVID hit on 17th of March of 2000, everything basically shut down. Mm-hmm. It kind of looked like one day they were working and the next day they just literally walked out, and it's like you could go back and start teaching a class there right now, and it's just very disappointing the way UW system left that facility right now. So
you're going to have the meeting, and what are some things you might suggest?
Well, we're going to, first of all, they need to clean their mess up. I mean, I think that's job number one, just the way they left it. And we'll go from there. Like my staff, after I got off the phone, I kind of had to calm down a little bit, because I got probably 50, 60 photos on my phone that I'm going to share with Mr. Rothman about what they did out there. And so we'll go from there. But I think they need to do a lot more than they're doing right now, that's for sure.
You have a lot of things going on. In fact, the governor's budget address is coming up tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow at 7 p.m. We'll sit there. Todd and I will be in our seats and listen to the governor's address, as with our Senate colleagues, and we'll just see what he has to say. Obviously, there's been a little sneak peeks on some of the things he's going to introduce. I know over the weekend there was some interest in some correction. And some correction facilities that he has some ideas about. I'm glad that he has finally recognized we need to close the Green Bay Correctional Institute, but obviously Waupun, that's something we'll talk about as we move forward. And if anybody don't know, Green Bay and the Waupun prison, they're max security prisons, I know, but they were built literally in the late 1800s. So if any of your listeners have ever seen the movie Shawshank Redemption, I mean, these are incredibly old prisons. They are taking an unbelievable amount of resources, i.e. money, to maintain them and fix things that are broken. It's unsafe for our correctional officers. And so it's high time that we, in my humble opinion, we should replace both of those and perhaps build like a prison like we have in Boscobel, where that one actually is doing quite well and is serving our needs as a state. And so I'm glad to see it's in there. We'll just see what the rest of the address will be tomorrow night.
So in other words, you'd rather see just one big prison, a new one? Or?
Well, so Green Bay and Waupun, respectively. Green Bay, right now, Green Bay holds about 1,000. It was built to hold around 800. Waupun is very similar. My suggestion is, I'm not saying we add bed capacity, because obviously Governor Evers would not support something like that, but my hope would be that we eventually close both of those prisons and build a new one with basically the same. So if the bed capacity is, we'll just say 1,800 between the two of them, let's build a new prison with the capacity of 1,800. It would be my suggestion, because Green Bay obviously is old and costing us, but so is Waupun. Waupun is also built in the late 1800s. It's incredibly high maintenance. A lot of the materials are failing, and it still has the same type of issues with staffing. that, you know, correctional staff don't like working at either one. And if you look at the vacancy rates across the board, we've increased our vacancy. We've decreased our vacancy rate, especially at Boscobel, New Lisbon. Like Boscobel is like 40% vacancy rates. They're down to like 1%. Whereas you look at Green Bay and Ripon, those vacancy rates are still very high because people don't want to work there. And I think that would go a long way as replacing those and just protecting our correctional officers.
Todd, what are you looking forward to in the governor's address?
You know, Tony said, hopefully we can finally address the prison situation. We've been trying to do that for a long time. And I think it's a starting point as far as where the prisons is. But, you know, I noticed a caveat in there that part of the solution he wants to release do early releases. And I'm not so sure that releasing prisoners is a I think that'll be a non-starter with us. It is kind of with me. And so that's just not a way to solve your prison overpopulation, is to just start releasing people. I look for a Christmas. It's going to be Christmas tomorrow night. And this is what I always tell people as we talk about the budget, because he is going to put every great soundbite and money and everything in there. I think, and Tony knows these numbers better than I do, is, you know, the last budget took a surplus and took us to a deficit of almost $1 billion and raised taxes tremendously. So I expect the same kind of budget. I will say that of the early drips, we call it, that he's been putting out on the budget, some of his programs that he's, like the ag stuff he's put out, that's an easy yes, and it's those kind of things. But it's going to be, I expect him just to raise taxes probably and start up. Continue programs. I think what's going to be interesting about this budget, a lot of the things that he has done with the federal COVID money, we're starting new programs, spending money for new positions, and that was one-time funding, and he's going to want to continue that. So I just urge your listeners to you know, kind of try to trigger that out. We have a child care crisis. We all know that. We need to work on that. But he's got a program he started with the federal money that's $500-600 million a year just to keep it going. And I mean, you know, we just can't go at the level he's going to win it. So I expect another budget that will be out of whack, and then we'll start negotiating. I don't know, what is it, Tony? About 3 weeks, 4 weeks, we'll get the numbers on this budget. The budget comes out, then LFB looks at it, Legislative Fiscal Bureau, and gives us the total numbers, what the programs are, and really 1,000-page document, and we'll go from there. But it'll be interesting to see.
Some light reading then, in other words, right?
Yeah.
So he'll introduce his budget tonight, or excuse me, tomorrow night, and we will come into finance and actually then introduce the budget to the legislature. And then to Todd's point, the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, which, you know, we've talked about with your listeners in the past, they will actually go through the actual budget to find out what every program costs. And then to Todd's point, then at the end, we'll kind of figure out what if there's a structural deficit or not. I would suspect that there will be a structural deficit. And basically what that means is at the end of the budget, you know, 2 years from now, it's how much we're in the hole or how much we're up. Typically, it's like an 1,800-page document, and it's quite the reading. So, and it's all broken down a bit. But I do want to emphasize one of the things that Todd mentioned was it's called Child Care Counts. Child Care Counts was a program that Governor Evers opened with using one-time money from the feds. And, you know, there's some misconception out there that child care has always been an issue. It was an issue when my wife and I had our kids in child care, you know, 25 years ago. It's an issue now. And we have provided funding in the budget. The big difference is with child care counts, kind of the way the governor has done it with the federal money, is basically everybody's getting their child care paid for it. And so what do I mean by that? In the northern part of my district, I have two doctors, and they have three children. And with child care counts, we collectively are paying for those two doctors' child care. And I think the majority of our constituents think that those two have the means to pay for their own child care and that we don't need to have the state pay for their child care. On the flip side of that, if we've got somebody, you know, a single mom with two kids in child care, I think as a society, we want to help her at that lower end. And in fact, we did do that in the last budget. There was actually $93 million put away to help those struggling on the lower end with child care costs. It's just the difference of philosophy. We understand there's a need to help with child care. It's just who and at what income level are we going to help those people?
Yeah, so how do you go about that? You divide it up by income?
Well, or you just say after a certain level, this is something you can have a debate about, like that one, anybody below basically 220% of the federal poverty level can apply and gets credit for their child care, and then above that you're not. Now last budget we actually increased that, and I could see us doing something like that again where we increase the income limit on somebody to get the program. But I think the vast majority of people think, you know, if you're, you know, you're at that higher end, like obviously two doctors, I don't think the majority of people think we should be paying for their child care. So it's income based is my point to you.
Mm-hmm. Todd, did you have something to add on that?
No, he did. Tony did a good job, and that's the problem with some of these programs. It's I have no problem helping people that truly need it, but there's a lot of these programs that are across the board that even Tony could qualify for, and I mean, really, he shouldn't qualify for it. His wife's got a good job, and he's a good farmer, but no, that's where the you know, it's just like you hear about expanding Badger Care and things like that. We have one of the top programs for low income people for health insurance in the United States, and it's recognized. And there are people, and the governor will probably propose this tomorrow night, expanding that to include people that make 50, 60, some $1,000 that are single or whatever. You know, so I mean, it's kind of those programs to me are meant for people that really need them. And I have no problem. And I don't think the public does either. It's when you start expanding to include more and more people, at some point the money's got to run out. We really don't have you hear about the magical $4 billion surplus that we have. We don't have a $4 billion surplus. I think cost to continue, that's just to keep existing programs like Medicaid and those going, is going to be about $2 billion. A lot of the money that is in that $4 billion figure is money that he's vetoed for bills that we've passed and he vetoed them. So that's part of that money. So I look at the $4 billion as one-time money. And as I said at a meeting the other day, when I came in, we were broke. When I was first elected, it was hard. I said, I don't know what's worse, having no money or having money sitting there that everybody wants. And it's like, and we got to remember that's one-time money. A lot of it's the taxpayers' money. So it's going to be an interesting budget cycle this time, I think. So
it really will. And that, again, that's what people see on the headline, is that number for the surplus, Tony.
And that's why, you know, when I was on with you last time, I tried to emphasize that a little bit about the $4 billion surplus. And so, kind of the analogy I shared with you and your listeners last time is, if you remember during that COVID period, you know, basically, you know, 2020 to 2023 is kind of those COVID years. Each individual, you know, if you're under a certain limit, you got a stimulus check. Okay. Well, if you went out and just spent that stimulus check thinking every quarter you're going to get a stimulus check, well, that's going to put you in the hole. You know, the state, basically people in the state, and like it was like $50 to $60 billion came from the federal government just to the state of Wisconsin alone. The stimulus checks I just mentioned that people got, that amount was a little over $18 million. So of the, you know, say $55 million that came to the state, $18 billion of that was just COVID money, you know, the stimulus checks. Well, people spent that. And it's interesting because if you look at the tax and the sales tax revenue for 21, 22, and 23, our normal sales tax revenue, like a percentage basis year over year, is maybe like 3.5, 4%, 3.7. But during those COVID years of 2021, there were 9.6. 2022, it was 9.4. And then in 2023, it was 6.8. percent that we were getting. So in other words, people were spending that stimulus check, and the state obviously collecting sales tax and income tax. We generated a tremendous amount of money, and that's Todd's point. We can't expect that's going to continue on, because it's not. We're already seeing growth slowing down. Our sales tax revenue last session was more like at 2.8%. So we're back to a very normal projections. And so we just got to be very careful as we move out into the future. So that's why Todd says this $4 billion is like one-time money, because people had all the COVID money, they spent it, and we basically collected the sales tax on that.
I know you guys are out and about a lot. Todd, you're mentioning seeing county board members and town board people and things like that. What's the biggest concern? I mean, what do you hear from some of the people?
As Tony alluded to before, Tony and I and Representative Tranel and Representative Jacobson, who represents Greene County, we met with their county board chairmen from the Southwest Regional Planning Commission counties, which is Grant, Greene, Richland, Iowa, and Lafayette. I'm actually on the commission, sir, representing Iowa County. I have been for years, so I deal with these guys all the time. So they wanted to have a meeting with us just to express their concerns, because they're struggling with their own budgets. And as I pointed out in the meeting, they kind of got hit by a perfect storm, too. We changed the shared revenue formula so they would be getting more money from the state last budget or last cycle. But however, they got hit so hard with inflation, as we all did, and health insurance costs. And they're struggling. And it was just not anything formal. It was just more discussion of, they wanted us to understand how hard it is for them to run the governments efficiently now. Because I will say, these counties that we represent and we're at this meeting are lean machines. They've spent years cutting, and they're down to the point where they can't get much more. So they were just looking for advice from us, or just kind of putting in a plug, try to get us more money when you can. And there's some things that they had, some ideas we can look at, like rules and regulations, and you know, court fees have the state gets most of the court fees, for example, and they're suggesting that maybe we could get more of the court fees to you know, take care of so the county wouldn't have to pick up so much of it. They haven't been looked at for years. I'm open to looking at that, letting the county keep more of the court fees and just different things like that. So it was a really good 2-hour discussion. Some of my county board chairs, and they're in my district, are very interesting characters. He probably can't hear me anyway up here, but my Lafayette County Board Chairman is a farmer, a very good farmer, and he lets you know what he thinks sometimes colorfully. And so it was a really good discussion. I really enjoyed it. Of course, I have dealt with local government for so many years, so I get it and I understand it. And it wasn't like them screaming at us. It was just like, hey, we have some suggestions. This is what our problems are. Can you help us? And I think, too, and back to Tony's piece about the money, is we brought up sales tax, but our gas tax is decreasing because cars are more efficient. You know, we have, and things like that. We're gonna have a problem with. I'm not sure when it's coming. He probably knows better than I do. But we're gonna have a problem with funding roads. That's gonna get worse, I'm afraid. We've got to figure out another mechanism to fund roads, get more road money back to the counties. I mean, the cost to do a road is outrageous. With the prices the way they are, and that's part of the county's fault. Problem too is they are looking for ways out to get more money because they want to keep up on their roads.
Right. So. And I know you've been a big proponent of rural roadways in the area too, Tony.
Well, and to Todd's point, you know, a mile of road's like over $470,000 right now. So, I mean, the costs have gone up, and everybody sees that. But, you know, to Todd's point, the when you look at the numbers for our transportation fund, remember in 2014, the state passed a constitutional amendment that any money that goes into the transportation fund, that that's a segregated account, it can only be used for roads. Before that, you know, just different administrations could go in and basically rob Peter to pay Paul if they ran short. Well, you can't do that anymore. So, you know, your gas tax is 30.9. That goes right into the transportation fund. Your registration fees, obviously, I know people don't like paying that, but it's $85. That goes right into the transportation fund. Your title of vehicle, that goes straight into the transportation fund. It can only be roads for bridges. That funding is actually flat. And it's been flat for the last couple of years. As Todd mentioned, as vehicles get more fuel efficient, as some people choose an electric vehicle, you know, that all affects the funding that goes in the transportation fund. Now, what we have done over the last several budgets is we have been very good about taking a lot of our excess money, our one-time money, and putting it into the transportation fund. And I will say, we have been making headway. I mean, I'm not saying we're there by any means, but we have slowly been chipping away at the backlog of a lot of road projects. And so, but to Todd's point, it's just one time in our state, we've got to have a discussion. What does the future of road funding mean? Are we going to still, you know, use the, you know, the tax, you know, the tax from the sale of a gallon of gas? You know, if so, what should that be? You know, are we going to do some type of, you know, per mile basis for people? Those are all have to be on the table, because once again, there is going to be a point where, you know, this $4 billion surplus, I could see that we're going to probably take some of that surplus and put more into roads. I mean, I think there's been, like last session, Todd and Representative Tranel and Howard were very instrumental in the ARIP, which was that Agricultural Roof and Road Improvement Program. Juneau County actually got one of those grants. You know, we've done more funding for a lot of more of the county roads, and I think we'll use more one-time money for that again this budget, but once again, we got to have some more long-term on what does long-term funding for roads look like.
Ever any talk about tolls?
Tolling is... Go ahead, Todd.
Well, you know, when I came in, we were talking about tolls in 2014. And it was a big thing. And in the Southeast, that was a great idea. Or didn't a great idea. We went and studied it. But to go to tolls would take years because the federal government has to sign off. And I don't know if they ever followed through with asking the federal government. But it would not affect this over here, this area over here. As I said the other day at this meeting, it's our problem over here is we're fighting tooth and nail to get money for roads to our area because the southeast quadrant of the state keeps saying, well, we have, and I've been told this by a Republican legislator before, I have 50,000 cars a day go through my district. You have 50 go on some of your roads. Why do you think you need more money? And my response is always, well, how do you think all the produce and all the stuff that's going on your roads, where do you think it comes from? I said, it comes from our area of the state to get shipped out of state. And so this is the problem that, you know, we kind of have as rural legislators is fighting and saying, hey, our roads are just as important. And part of the problem out here is we have in the townships, especially in the villages and stuff, we have 1950s and 60s road system that was built for the 1950s and 60s. It does not, isn't adequate for the equipment, the farm equipment we have today, the size of our vehicles. So it's just a problem. And I would note, we were talking about the counties, but I'm hearing the same thing from municipalities. And Howard and I spoke at the Towns Association regional meeting a couple weeks ago on the towns. Their number one thing is more road money. And that was just pretty much the whole discussion for an hour and a half was more road money and to help them out. So we're hearing it from all quarters of local government.
On the morning show, we have Tony Kurtz, Todd Novak, and we'll have more coming up here after this time out.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always always comes first.
This is Paul from Prescription Center. For over 40 years, we have been a trusted member of the health care of our community. We've always been here for everyone. From West Seminary Street, where it all started, to the hospital, and now to Sexsonville Road, we have provided honest advice, low prices, and with the help of many of our friends, a pay-it-forward account to help those that can't afford their medication. We are humbled by the trust we have earned. We have always made every effort to make pharmacy affordable to all. We accept all insurances because you deserve to have your plan honored. The only area pharmacy to take TRICARE and CHAMP VA. What better way to say thank you to those who served? We thank all for their trust. If you want this type of service, let us be your pharmacy of choice.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
Ever wondered if it's too late to become physically active? At Simon's Recreation Complex, they believe you're never too old to exercise. More and more older adults are proving this every day. Before you start, remember to take some precautions. Check with your doctor before beginning any exercise program. Start slow. Don't try to do too much too fast. Choose activities that are fun and suit your needs. Wear comfortable clothing and footwear. And always take time to warm up and cool down. Stretch slowly to avoid injuries. Simon's Recreation Complex is proud to be a part of Silver Sneakers, Silver and Fit, and Renew Active programs. These top fitness programs are designed specifically for older adults, ensuring your safety and enjoyment. Call or stop today. With your Medicare Supplement Insurance card, you may be eligible for a free membership, including all classes. Discover why many of the members call Simon's Recreation Complex their personal fountain of youth. Let them help you increase your energy and decrease the aches and pains of aging. Partner with Simon's Recreation Complex and Richland Center for a healthier, happier you. Remember, you bring the commitment, and they have the means to make it happen. Simon's Recreation Complex, where age is just a number and fitness is for everyone.
Wilkinson Auctions is proud to present our annual Hillsboro Area Equipment Auction, Wednesday, February 19th at the Hillsboro Auction Yard. This is a huge auction with tractors, farm equipment, tillage equipment, planters, trucks, trailers, combines, and more. We're taking quality consignments of equipment. Get your equipment up to the Hillsboro Auction Yard today. This is a live auction with online bidding available. The Hillsboro Area Equipment Auction, Wednesday, February 19th at the Hillsboro Auction Yard. More info at wilkinsonauctions.com.
It's great to catch up, Jamie. How's business?
Good. Are you up to speed with the new beneficial ownership reporting requirements?
Sort of. What's it about?
It's a new initiative to help fight crimes like money laundering, fraud, and drug trafficking. A lot of small businesses like ours just have to report some basic info to the federal government about the real people behind them.
Does that include my cafe?
There are some exemptions for certain companies, but don't worry. There's lots of guidance on the government's website about who needs to file. Check out fincen.gov/BOI. Filing is easy and free. It took me less than 20 minutes.
Looks like I do have to file. Thanks, Jamie. It's great having a supportive business community.
Reporting beneficial ownership information helps protect U.S. national security. Filing is quick, secure, and free. And it's the law. Learn more at fincen.gov/BOI.
Representatives Novak and Kurtz in the studio with us today on WRCO Radio, the next half of the morning show. Todd, I saw your name, and you were a part of introduction of legislation for the Office of School Safety. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, the Office of School Safety was created. I authored the bill to create it in 2018 with federal money. The office, along with a $100 million safety grant for schools to apply for to update their schools and make locked doors and stuff. So it was federal money to start to create the Office of School Safety. And what they do is they work with all schools in the state. They have a tip line. If there's any kind of threat or anything, you call this tip line and they will walk you through it. They come and they train teachers in every school. And there's about a staff of about 14, and they do a lot of work. I wish they could talk more about the work they've done, and the threats that they've diffused and the situations they've been in, but unfortunately they can't. So long story short, the money ran out. That was going to run out last year, and so they were going to have to cut 10 positions down to 4. And Senator Quinn, who's from up north, and I put a bill out to move some money around, not new money, but move some money around in the state so they could keep funding those positions until September of this year. The bill that we put out Friday, we worked with Attorney General Call and the Office of School Safety, is to make these 14 point some positions permanent. So we don't have to do this every 2 years in the budget. It would automatically be made permanent and funded. You know, I had a school shooting in my district it was right before school got out, I believe, or April or May. It was in Mount Horeb. And so I got to see, unfortunately, firsthand the great work they do. And I've talked to the school staff up there, and I hear nothing but praise from the staff at the Office of School Safety. So it's very, very important. It's near and dear to me that we do this. Because this, you know, we don't think about that out in rural districts as much as, you know, you look where these shootings are. It doesn't really happen that much in rural districts, I think. But also, you notice a lot of this is going on because of mental health issues. The kid in Mount Horeb didn't even have a real gun, but he pointed at an officer. He was struggling. The Madison incident we just had, obviously, there's some mental health issues there. And the Office of School Safety, they go in and they try to help identify, you know, hey, this kid's doing X, Y, and Z, just kind of off different things. Should we be, you know, so people will call and talk to a specialist at the Office of School Safety and say, is there something we should be looking for here and to get ahead of this? And so I believe we'll probably get it permanent. I've worked with a lot of the school districts on it. They, like I said, I've heard nothing but praise about the program. So I don't want to have them lose Tim. It would be detrimental for them to lose 10 people. And I think, well, how many tips did they get through their line last year? Off the cuff, maybe 2,800. This is how many tips.
My goodness.
And this is Facebook postings. This is, you know, you've all heard about school is going to close today because of a perceived threat. It's usually a Facebook post or Snapchat. They're on all that. They get all these tips, and then they work with the local law enforcement. They work with the schools. So, like I said, I wish they could tout more of what they do and what they've seen and what they've stopped. But they, unfortunately, they can't, but it really works.
Is it a staff of, is it 24 hours a day?
Yes, 24/7. Uh-huh. And then I think the big part too, and this is where I hear the great things from the teachers, is they come out and train. They hold sessions. On in-service days, you see school in-service days, and yeah, there may be a day where the Office of School Safety comes out and is training teachers and signs to look for and everything. We've got the schools now really secure. You know, you can't get in a school without buzzing in and camera systems, and we've given them a lot of some money for that and stuff, but it's just now identifying the child that has the issue and everything. You know, I it's a different world than when I grew up. You know, we didn't have social media. It's, and you had to talk to other kids. And I think between the advancement of social media and COVID really did some damage. Looking back, we should have never closed the schools down. Did some damage, some mental health damage. And you got kids, you know, I used to ride my bike to find kids in the neighborhood to play with. Now they get out, come home from school, and they get on their PlayStation and don't communicate, and it's just a society problem, and it's unfortunate that we have to have an Office of School Safety, but it's the reality.
I think nipping into the bud, Tony, is a real key too, because you know, after some school violence episodes, we read about after the fact that this happened to this person, this happened, and you wonder, there were so many red flags, how come somebody didn't catch that? You
know? Well, and that's to Todd's point. He brings up, you know, the Office of School Safety helps schools with those, I don't want to say telltale signs, but it gives them the tools to look for those things, but also for people not to be afraid to say something. You know, it's amazing. In my previous life, being in the military, I did a lot of things with accident investigations and things like that. How many times I sat and did an investigation and people would say to me, yeah, we kind of thought this was a problem. Well, why didn't you say something? And I understand people are afraid to say something because you don't want to get somebody in trouble. You don't want to embarrass somebody. But this is where they'll do the investigation. They'll get the professionals involved to say, okay, is there a threat? Because what we don't want to do is wake up the next morning and say, you know what, doggone it, that could have been stopped if I would have said something. And that's where, you know, it's very valuable to have those individuals there and the expertise, and then training those teachers on what they need to be looking for as well.
EMS, I know we wanted to address that today.
I do want to talk about that. You know, Todd mentioned for the Wisconsin Towns Association, they're putting on their district meetings. Obviously, Todd and Travis were down at a southern part. Myself and Senator Kieski was more at another district meeting up in Wisconsin Dells and had the counties and the townships up in that area. And obviously, road funding for the townships was definitely brought up. That was probably half the discussion. The other half of the discussion was EMS. And, you know, the funding mechanisms for EMS. On Friday, I met with the EMS director here in Richland County and just talked about some of the struggles with funding, also workload. I mean, it's interesting. We have an aging population. I think everybody sees that in Richland County. With that aging population, those ambulance calls are actually going up. And you've seen that over the last several years. Unfortunately, reimbursements have not kept up. And so that's something that we are looking at a bill right now in the assembly. And also Senator Markline and I are looking at a bill to try to update some of the funding mechanisms for EMS to try to make it more of a regional wise instead of maybe a county focus. So there are a lot of different things we're looking at because we are stressed in the EMS and to be fair, in the fire departments as well.
Mm-hmm. Anything you wanted to add, Tom?
Yeah, that was the road. You're right, roads and EMS. But another thing is the training hours. That was one of the biggest complaints. It takes a lot to be an EMT, and that was one of the, you know, you got somebody that wants to really be an EMT, but they have younger kids in school and married and whatever, and they got to go to class all the time. They have to get so many hours. And I know over the years we've chipped away a little bit at some loosening some of those regulations. Not that they can't, they have to learn how to save your life, I mean, but it's just ridiculous some of the regulations they have to go through. And then, you know, rural towns or the townships especially, they're in districts. They have to contract with a municipality if they don't have their own. And as costs go up, is the whoever they're contracting with, costs go up, they pass that on or have to negotiate a new contract. It's caused a lot of conflicts. I've got a couple townships that, you know, got in a fight with the place, one the village they were, and moved to a different one, and then everything falls apart, and that's gone on a lot. I know Friday at our meeting, you know, one of the counties mentioned about going to a countywide EMS service and just grouping every municipality into one and having an ambulance serve, you know, crew here and here and here in the county, and the county taxing for it. And but we've got to figure it out because it's not expensive to run. I mean, when I left the city of Dodgeville, it was like $400,000 just for an ambulance. So it's not cheap, but we need them. And as you know, as Tony's right, his people are getting more his age, you know, they need an ambulance more. And so it's the baby boomers are getting old and things. So yeah,
you want to know that somebody's going to respond when you call.
But that's the issue. I mean, especially when you look at, I mean, our area, we're fortunate. We're okay right now, knock on wood. But when you look at some of the parts of northern Wisconsin, I mean, some of those places this past year did not have EMS service. And that, obviously they do now, but there was a period that they did not have coverage. And so I think we have come to the expectation when you dial 911, someone's going to show up. Well, we just have to make sure when you dial 911 that continues, someone's going to pick you up. And there's stress there because of the, you know, volunteerism, just the workforce shortages, things like that, and funding. I mean, the funding for years have not been there. Last budget, we did increase the funding assistance program from 2.2 million up to 25 million. That directly goes to EMS providers and helps with equipment, training costs, etc. But, you know, we're realizing that we need to do more funding.
What's the latest on broadband?
Broadband is always something that's brought up every time. It's interesting. I was reading an article the other day, and unfortunately, the money that the federal government allocated, it was called BEAD, and I don't ask me what the acronym is, but it, like the state of Wisconsin was supposed to get $1.1 billion. I mean, that money is still in the pipeline. Unfortunately, we haven't got any yet. I know providers like Reedsburg Utility, I was helping them last week with an issue that they're having with one of their BEAD grants. I know Laval and all these other providers are getting in the pipeline for the grants. It's just none of those have been allocated yet. So it'll be interesting tomorrow night to see what the governor does for that. I will be very, I'm just going to be brutally honest. If we have $1.1 billion that we're supposed to get from the feds, what people have to understand, a private company has to match that. So if it's Spectrum or Charter or whoever, or like Laval Telephone or whoever, they also have to have it, you know, it's they have to have skin in the game. You know, it's some type of match. So it's really like a $1.7 billion that we're going to have for broadband in the next couple of years. It's just we're going to want to see that money work through before maybe as a state we put more money into broadband. And that will be kind of that last connection down on the rural road is where I think we're going to have funding for that. It just depends on what we do and what the feds are going to do.
Pretty important, Todd, because a lot of people are working at home and attracting people that want to move out into the rural areas. They want to work at home. Right.
Right. You know, and I think, too, I was just talking to one of my townships, Town of Clyde, which is, you know, in your listener area.
Sure.
They're really struggling down there because, you know, the terrain around here is terrible. And I think people think broadband, it's like bring the fiber right up to my door. You can't put fiber in some of this area because of the rock. And so we've got to figure out. And I think as technology is evolving, you know, I think it's going to be a satellite whole, just no towers, no nothing. It's just going to be all satellite here at some point. But when that comes, I don't know. But we've come a long ways, I will say, getting broadband since my time in office, you know, 10 years ago to now. They are putting more and more broadband in. But for Dodgeville, for example, TDS came out and put stuff in the city, or, you know, more another option in the city. That's four options the city of Dodgeville has for cable, internet, and fiber. We don't need four options in a city. I would rather that money be spent to one of my rural areas, Town of Dodgeville, for example. However, it's more, you know, it's a moneymaker for them to go where the population is. You know, you look around here and you got somebody that's 4 miles from their next neighbor. I believe I had heard a figure that it's like $50,000 to $75,000 a mile to put fiber in the ground. That's just to put, you know, so you look at, you think about, you know, like that. So,
well, and just to Todd's point, 3 years ago, it was $32,000 a mile. Now we're up to in excess of $50,000 a mile. So it kind of goes with when I talked about road funding, what a mile of road costs now looks like a mile of fiber. And that's where I think you look at Todd's point is maybe it needs to be all of the above. Yes, fiber's the gold standard. But with the technology that's on board, you know, maybe it is a satellite based. You know, there's different things we need to think about. But the other aspect of that, Phil, is the capacity. In other words, can the people on the ground, like I was coming down from Waniwok this morning and there was some equipment on the side of the road because they've been boring. You know, they've been putting fiber in the ground as we speak, probably not this week, but they've been doing that. There is a capacity issue. You know, they only have so much folks that can do that work as well. So you don't want to necessarily flood the market with more money. We just got to kind of piecemeal it on what their capacity is as we build this out.
From high technology to lower technology, but they've been talking about fighting to keep AM radios in cars and tractors and things like that. How about that?
Well, I'm not. I have four tractors. Two of them have, you know, real nice cabs, And I think AM is still very popular with folks, so I would fully support that we keep those in the vehicles. Hell, and tractors.
I'm really old. I can remember. That's all I listened to when I got my driver's license, or on the farm and stuff, and milking cows is AM and stuff. But I go back to eight tracks right now we have I have satellite radio in my car and AM and FM, but yeah, it's interesting. So, but you're in the radio world, so
yeah.
So who's going to need the EMS before, what'd you say? Right?
That's right, I didn't give you the proper chance to come back on that. Slamming you about your age.
I think it's interesting that was brought up a couple years ago about how they were going to do away with AM. There is a need out there. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Why? It's like ham operators. You know, there's still a huge lot of folks that really get into, you know, long-range radios and things like that. It's a niche, kind of a niche thing.
Well, I think it's kind of a safety thing, too. Yes. You know, if you talk about if cell towers would go down or whatever, it's still a way to communicate in an emergency situation.
Well, you segue from that a little bit. You talk about, you know, we were talking about broadband stuff. I tell people that can't get rid of their landlines. You can't get rid of their landlines because their cell reception is so, you know. Mm-hmm. And companies are starting to get rid of landlines. I think AT&T is going to get rid of them and stuff. So I worry about that too.
Right. I've heard about that within the next 5 years, I think is the goal. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, thanks, gentlemen. Thanks for the info today.
No, thank you, Phil.
We'll let you get on down the road.
Yeah, it's great to be here, Phil, and always good to see you. And Tony and I get to spend the next 3-4 quality days together in sessions. So it's kind of kicking my week off. Great.
So you have the budget address tomorrow, the governor's address, I should say, tomorrow, but then you're back in session Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So. Any listening sessions in the area?
I haven't yet. I've got some to schedule. I know Tony has had some, Howard's had some, Travis has done a couple, so yeah.
Okay, good. We'll see
you. We had, obviously, 2 weeks ago, we were here on Monday in the Richland County. Last Monday, we were in the Sauk County, Juneau County area, so very good. I appreciate everybody's participation.
Very good. Thanks a lot. Representatives Tony Kurtz and Todd Novak on today's morning show.
Since 1956, Meyer Oil and LP has been your trusted, locally owned fuel delivery partner. Whether it's for your home, farm, or business, we've got you covered. Offering a range of fuels from propane, diesel, gas, and bulk lubes, Meyer Oil is here for you. Serving most of Richland, Sauk, and surrounding counties, our friendly staff is ready to assist you. Please consider Meyer Oil and LP for all your fuel needs. Call us at 608-524-3914.
Now through March 8th, get 20% off selected items at Krause Monument in Richland Center. With top quality craftsmanship, top service, and a 90-day delivery guarantee, your satisfaction is assured. Call today to make an appointment at 608-647-8314.
Ithaca and Buena Vista Lions Clubs are coming together for a great cause. Join them for a pancake breakfast fundraiser in support of Jennifer Ward on February 23rd from 7 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at Ithaca High School Commons. The community will gather to enjoy a delicious breakfast, a fun bounce house for kids, and an opportunity to give back. Adults can eat for just $10, students $5, preschoolers eat free. Remember, carryouts are available. Don't forget to check out the bake sale, silent auction, and meat raffle. If you want to contribute, call Bill at 608-475-6870 or Joanne at 608-516-2675. Come together, enjoy a great meal, and support a wonderful cause. The Ithaca and Buena Vista Lions Clubs Benefit Pancake Breakfast Fundraiser in support of Jennifer Ward on February 23rd from 7 to 12:30.
Dealing with the loss of a loved one is never easy. I'm Nick Hodge of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service in Richland Center in Muscadet. Many families have found pre-planning can help ease the burden of loss. Anyone can create a plan at any stage in life, and you can make changes at any time. Pre-planning is free of charge at the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service. Please contact us to schedule a time to meet with a member of our staff to discuss your options and design your plan in person. You'll be glad you did.
Business taxes. We're stressing about all the time and all the money you spent on your taxes.
This is my bill?
Now Business Taxes is a TurboTax small business expert who does your taxes for you and offers year-round advice at no additional cost, so you can keep more money in your business. Now this is taxes. Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com/business. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service.
Hillsboro Equipment sells outdoor power equipment, services outdoor power equipment, and takes care of the people who depend on their outdoor power equipment. With an 11,000 square foot shop, over $1 million in parts, and multiple trained technicians, Hillsboro Equipment will get you tuned up and ready to go. From the combines in the field to the lawnmower and chainsaw in your yard, they service it all, any make, any model. See the service experts at Hillsboro Equipment or call 489-2275.
Hey, this is Dave Grant with Civic Media. I recently got U.S. Cellular's home internet service from Cell Plus in Baraboo. The router was free, the setup was so easy, and the speed is incredible. Whether from my house or from the cottage. Best part, the price is locked in for 3 years for $39.99 a month when bundled with a wireless plan. Terms do apply. Go to your nearest U.S. Cellular authorized agent, Cell Plus, and check it out.
Attention hunters and outdoor enthusiasts. The Driftless Area Deer Classic is back this Saturday from 9 to 5 at the Richland Center Community Center. Bring your deer head for a chance to win a gun. Explore exciting vendors, bucket and gun raffles, and enter the trail camera photo contest. Have sheds? Bring them along. They're welcome, though they won't be scored. Enjoy delicious food and drinks while sharing stories with fellow hunters. Admission is just $5, and kids 16 and under get in free. Want to beat the rush? Pre-register Friday, February 21st from 5 to 9 p.m. or Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon. For more info, call 475-4963. Don't miss the Driftless Area Deer Classic this Saturday.
Landowners manage a variety of assets every day. Trees on your property are an asset you shouldn't take for granted. The staff of Meister Log and Lumber has been buying logs and standing timber in southwest Wisconsin since 1936. Meister's professional forest management team can help you make the decisions that will be in the best interest of you and your trees. Give professional timber manager Toby Witkowski a call at Meister Log and Lumber.